You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 19 August. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb headquarters in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Viv Govender as the JSC couldn't open yesterday, and those 10-cent results. How much do the results matter? How much is it actually what the Chinese government might do? Talking with Marvel Douglas around managing an offshore portfolio. Is there, and if there is, what is that ideal number of stocks? I suspect far too many of us have too few. And then Becky Mkhize, FNB's issued some ETNs, clean energy and water conservation, a great new addition to our market. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Kira needs the kids to come back to school. Yeah, they do. I mean, they were hit by a couple of things. Perhaps the biggest is that they gave provisions for lower fees and the like, but there was still a large amount of bad debts. After a 1.5 billion rand rights issue last year, their debt pool actually went up a little bit, but it still did. And then Business Day, sale of Burger King seems to be back on the table, but garnished with secrecy. So the Competition Commission seems to be saying, okay, it can happen, but we're not quite sure because it was a secret meeting. And remember, it got rejected by the ComCom simply because they said no, because it lost its BEE status. Morning markets, the US was red. We saw the S&P down 1.1%, NASDAQ off 1%. Asia, red. Sydney off 0.5%. Tokyo down 0.7%. Commodities, red overnight. Gold, 1779. Rand, 1504. Haven't had a 15 in front there for a while. Top 40 opening call, 580 points down. That's almost 1%. And that is 10 cent trades 1% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Viv Govender, portfolio manager at Rand Swiss. Viv, the big story yesterday, which shouldn't have been but was that the JSC couldn't get a going until 2:30 in the afternoon. They'd had a record day on Tuesday, and I appreciate it was double the previous record. There was a lot of volume going through, but really an exchange exists to do two things: process data, match trades, and the JSC fundamentally failed on one of those, and that is, frankly, a very poor showing.
Look, there's no way to avoid saying that. The problem with the JSC, and you know, is that, you know, many of the systems are quite old. Yeah. It's often a case of, I just saw a picture, I don't know if you saw it, which compared the evacuation in Saigon to the helicopter lifting up in Kabul, you know, the last couple of days. And the helicopter looked the same. And the reason for that is not just because of, you know, the situation, et cetera, et cetera. It's the fact that, you know, when you have something complicated like a helicopter, you don't really want to be doing too many innovative things. because generally, once you have a system that works, you're changing too many things is more likely to cause problems than anything else. And that's kind of what the JSC hits. It should not have happened. The impact, other than reputational, really, is going to be very minor. I mean, we've had plenty of public holidays, throughout the year, and they don't really do much in terms of, like, you know, affecting how easy it is to basically invest, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're thinking from that point of view, one missed day of trading is not really going to affect fundamentally anything. Even, you know, trades are probably going to be, like, you know, probably the same, because if you wanted to buy or sell something, yesterday you put on a buy or sell the same thing today. That's obviously one thing, but interpretationally, it's not great. I mean, the JSC has had some issues over the last couple of years in terms of maybe not infrastructure as much, but in terms of things such as, for instance, regulation with STIF and so on, and this doesn't really help things.
Yeah, and I take your point around the helicopters analogy. I like that. I mean, this is an MS-DOS program, the BDA system, designed in the 80s. It works, and I know that they've tried tweaking it, but it works, and you're scared to break it. 10-cent results out yesterday, not a bad set of numbers, some beats in there. In your view, how much do we focus on the 10-cent results, or how much is it actually we wait for the next pronouncement from the Chinese government?
Look, unless it turns out to be a stand-off situation, it was bringing up twice in such a short period of time, where, you know, it turns out, oh, Tencent's been a fraud and there's nothing in there. It's almost entirely about what happens in the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, and their attitude towards the company. Right now, look, I mean, I've seen many explanations for what's happening in China at the moment and why they're doing these things. And, you know, I've even seen some people take what they're saying at face value and how China is, you know, pioneering data management, because, you know, data privacy and, you know, consumer rights, etc., really does not make any sense given China's, you know, other you know, issues. But, yeah, look, there's a real change happening there, and it's far wiser people than I are going to understand just what's going on in their minds. The one thing I think I mentioned it to you before is that, you know, you put a guy that's close to 70 in charge of a country and you just say you're in charge for life,
yeah,
starting at, like, you know, 70, or almost 70, say, with late 60s, things don't get better. We've seen up north, you know, formerly great revolutionary leaders turn into be, you know, despots who, you know, only concerned with basically staying in charge. And it could be the case that the CCP may be thinking to themselves, you know, we've got a good thing here. Our number one risk is not the fact that the country falls behind, is us getting out of power personally.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, let's do what makes us safer as opposed to what's good for the country. And, you know, until we can figure out what they think their plan is, it's probably a very difficult thing to invest in China.
Yep, I take your point on that, and I take your point. We need more young leaders. Viv Govender, portfolio manager at Rand Swiss, appreciate the early morning time. Our poll on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles today, the JC, those technical issues, only started trading at 2:30. My question to you is, what did you do while you were waiting? Maybe you didn't notice, went for a walk, raged at your screen. I did all sorts of other things, frantically waiting for it to come back. You can have your say, you can have your vote, LinkedIn and Twitter.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com. or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Pranhana Naidu, co-fund manager at Global Equity Fund Melville Douglas. Pranhana, appreciate the early morning time. The debate around investing offshore, I mean, we know that offshore is becoming important, particularly, I mean, South Africa is such a tiny space in the global economy. You know, our GDP is, what, less than 1%. We need to be offshore. Is there a sense that most South Africans probably actually risk being overexposed to our local market and that they're not looking enough at offshore exposure?
Good morning, Simon, and morning to the listeners. Absolutely, Simon. I mean, you correctly said, you know, South Africa is less than 1% from a global GDP perspective. And I think the opportunity set for great investments is so much, you know, it's much wider offshore.
Mm-hmm.
This allows you to sort of cherry pick, you know, really the most attractive investments, of course, taking into consideration on a risk return, you know, adjusted basis, but really gives you access to innovative, exciting, fast growing industries that is actually becoming increasingly more and more accessible to all South Africans. You know, historically there was this perception that it was only accessible to, you know, clients with a lot of money and, you know, extra sort of to save, but it's becoming increasingly accessible to more people that are just looking to broaden their investment exposure.
And then what about, I mean, the phrase coined by Peter Lynch in his 1980s book, One Up on Wall Street, diversification, simply having too many stocks. The inverse, of course, is simply having not enough stocks. I suspect a lot of South Africans go offshore and they buy Apple, they buy Tesla, and they kind of pause at that point, maybe one or two other fangs. Is there an ideal number, an ideal range that we should have for a proper diverse portfolio into how many stocks we should be looking at?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a great term, diversification, and he was basically using it to describe management teams that spread their time and resources far too thin, you know, and basically it became a distraction as opposed to meaningfully contributing to your end goal, in this case, you know, enhanced returns. And so there isn't an exact number. I mean, based on modern portfolio theory, you can see the benefits of diversification tend to decline after, you know, sort of 10 stocks. But at Melville Douglas, we feel that's a little bit too aggressive. You know, it only takes one or two of those stocks to completely blow up your investment track record. So within our portfolio, we have a fairly concentrated portfolio. So for the Global Equity Fund, we say anywhere between 25 and 35 stocks feels appropriate to us. And that's, you know, that's allowed us to sort of make money for our clients through the compounding effect of sustainable returns without having any one stock massively skew the outcome of that return.
I take your point. I mean, it seems a lot, but if you've only got 10, you know, one goes bust and that's a tenth of your portfolio. And of course this, I mean, you know, when we think offshore, we tend to kind of default to the US and to equities. But actually there is the question around asset allocation, and there is a markets beyond just the US. I mean, there's, you know, we can perhaps park China aside, but there's great assets in Europe. There's Latin America. There's, you know, other markets in Asia where we can actually look to build up that portfolio that gives us some sort of geographic and also then again, as I said, some sector differential.
Absolutely. So I think on the, you know, at Melville Douglas, at least how we start looking at it is we don't screen per region. Mm-hmm. We just want to identify, and we focus on bottom-up fundamental research. So we just want to identify, you know, the best companies that have strong secular growth drivers, irrespective of where they happen to be listed. Of course, at this point in time, as most investors would be, there is a natural bias towards the US.
Sure.
But that may not always be the case going forward, you know. So we just follow the best listed companies, the well-managed companies where there are strong secular drivers for growth. And of course, you know, different countries come with different risks. So we just bake all of that into the valuation. And the end goal is just to get sort of the best ideas for our clients.
I like that. If it's the right stock, the geography is not unimportant, but becomes less important. A last question: What about also that holding of just U.S. dollars? I mean, it, in some senses, it's a bit of a boring asset class, a bit of a boring investment. But as a long-term investor, it'll work for you with depreciation of the currency. And as someone who might one day have offshore expenses, be there a holiday or something like that, is there a place in a broader portfolio for just US dollar?
Yeah, Simon, I think most of our clients, and why you really want to invest offshore, is to get exposure to these attractive, fast-growing equities. Mm. And so the global equity investment, you know, is sort of the selling point. And if you think about what cash is giving you offshore now, it's close to zero. In some European countries, it's negative. So it's not very attractive at this point in time. And what clients often do is that they use their offshore investment in dollars or hard currency to then match that hard currency expense that they may have sometime down the future.
I take your point on that. We'll leave it there. That's Pranav Naidu, co-fund manager, Global Equity Fund, Melville Douglas. I think that 25 to 35 number probably shocks a lot of people, but it is around, you've got to diversify and you've got to get that space right. And I think the key point, obviously, we can use some ETFs to really get that and then do that satellite core approach. Appreciate the early morning time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Becky Mkhize, he's CEO of FNB Wealth and Investment Solutions. Becky, appreciate the early morning. We chatted back in October. You'd listed a bunch of exchange traded notes onto the JSE tracking offshore stocks, individual stocks. And since then, you've added some shares to it and increased the range. This week you came something slightly different, bringing some ETNs, but they feeders in a sense. Three of them: global clean energy, global water, social responsibility investing. This really is a slightly new space for you, but in light of that UN climate report last week, a space that's going to become significantly more important in terms of water and clean energy.
Yes. Good morning, Simon. Good morning to the listeners. So this falls in line with what we've been wanting to do, is give clients exposure to you know, companies and indexes representing the future of the global economy. So things like mobility, gaming, clean energy, biotech, etc. So these ETNs fall slap bang in the sustainable development field and in areas of clean energy, like you said, water supply, low carbon emissions. So we think it's a good thing to give clients exposure to that and also help the planet and its people.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, it's a trend that's starting. It's a trend that's going to only strengthen over our lifetimes. You've again done the compo and the quanto. If I recall, the compo is the one that does take the currency into account. So if the rand strengthens, it'll take some shine off return. The quanto is essentially currency neutral. In other words, the rand will have zero impact on the it'll just track the basket price.
That's good. That's correct, Simon.
Sorry, carry on.
And what we've seen is most clients that have gone in for the compo, so with currency exposure, I'd say the split is about 75-25. Okay. So it means people do think over time the rand will depreciate.
Yeah, in the short term, the rand can do almost anything, but I think it's that long term. You've gone with ETNs across the board here, ETNs as opposed to exchange traded funds. The key point for an investor, really, the key difference means that we can't put it into a tax free account. Your reasoning, thinking behind ETNs over ETFs?
Given that we're able to do this as an issuer and use sort of our balance sheet, it's also allowed us to, from a financial inclusion, drop the minimums to 10 rand to allow people to invest for as little as that. So that was what we also tried to go for, is how do we increase, you know, access and get more people to be able to access these and get exposure. So, I mean, there's a lot of ETFs on the market. Mm-hmm. So we just thought, you know, the ETNs is something slightly different and different nuances that can help give people more options.
Yeah. A last question. Of course, ETNs then have expiry dates. What is the duration of these? And at the end of the period, you can either, you know, you could pay out or you could roll them. How long do these run for?
The duration is about 5 years, so and with the intention that, you know, when we get to that period to roll them.
Okay, so they will then roll and clients will then be put into the new one. Becky Mkhize, CEO, FNB Wealth and Investment Solutions, appreciate the early morning, sir. That's it for today. A poll yesterday on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles at MoneyWeb. We were chatting with Henry Biddlecombe from Anchor, and he made a very compelling argument around Apple doubling over the next couple of years, which would make it a $5 trillion company. We asked you, do you agree? A third of you said yes. 10% of you have taken profits on Apple. That was perhaps brave. But then more than half of you actually said, heck no, tech is overpriced. And I got to say, the Nasdaq's had a rough couple of days, but I mean, still just off those all-time highs. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We are live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m., podcast available just after 7 on both the website, the app, and of course wherever good podcasts are found. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordora, Nicole. Thanks to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.